Hi, my name is Amy B. I'm a very grateful compulsive overeater living in a recovered state from the food for today, one day at a time. I'm very grateful to be here to carry the message. I want to thank Vincent for asking me to carry the message that there is a solution to this common problem that we face, as it says in the introduction. As it says also in How It Works, that was read, our personal adventures before and after. So I'm going to give you a bit of a taste of my personal adventures before that led me into the rooms of OA. I'm going to very quickly share some photos to qualify, and I'll do my best to explain them for those who are listening and not watching. So here we go. If you can all see my screen, you see on it a bunch of photos that were taken over various periods in my life that represent one side of my disease in compulsive, disordered food and eating behaviors. And this side is binge eating, not just obsessing, putting on weight in a very, very fast period of time, a lot of weight in a small period of time. All of the photos here are, a lot of them are not in focus because I avoided cameras, or I destroyed photos, or I hid behind people, or I was the one taking the picture. I'm over 300 pounds in many of these photos. And as I said, this was over different periods of my life. And this is one of the ways that my spiritual malady manifested with my eating and food behaviors. It's not the only way, though. It also manifested like this, which is to say that I restricted and over-exercised. And I have a lot more photos from this period of time in which I'm wearing clothing that fits my body. There's one photo on the screen where I am running in what it was a half marathon. And I don't know if you can see, but there's something tied around my knee because I was in horrible pain, just horrible pain. And it didn't matter because I was going to hurt myself in one direction or another. So I have more photos of this time, but I was no less disordered. I was in no less pain, and I was no less spiritually disconnected. I share this photo. This is a polka dot dress. This is a selfie in which I had taken the weight off for not the first time, not the second time, not the third time, not the fourth time, many, many, many times, but I'd managed to keep it off for a little bit of time here. This is before the rooms of OA, and I really thought that I had it. I had physical recovery, and I really thought that I couldn't go back to the way that I was before. Not this time. Not this time. However, after this photo comes this, and this is again over 300 pounds. This is my second day in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, May 2nd, 2018. And it is the first day of my current abstinence. I'll go back to that in a minute, but now I show a graph. This is a graph that is tracks my weight for the 25 years of my life before I came into the rooms of OA. I came in my mid 40s. So you do the math. It's the in my entire adult life. And this is a red line, and it goes sharply up and sharply down and sharply up and sharply down. And I have the graph titled A Powerless and Unmanageable Life, because that's what it looks like. I can't stop once I've started, and I also cannot stay stopped. And that's what it teaches me in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous when it comes to the manifestation of this allergy, this abnormal reaction. What other folks can do with impunity, I cannot. And I proved that over and over and over again. But I didn't understand why. Anyway, so those are my personal adventures before. So what happened to get me into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous? Well, here's what happened. My life was in shambles. On paper, fine. great, maybe even on paper. Loving relationship, healthy family, good job, roof over my head. And yet I was in so much pain. I could not interact with the folks around me who loved me so much. I was unable to be at home in my own heart, in my own head, much less my own body. Forget it. I'm not even thinking about that at that point. But I was just in so much pain. And I went to see a therapist and I sat on her couch and I talked about all of the pain and all of the, and I cried and I cried. And towards the end of that session, I said, as an aside, oh, by the way, I'm over 300 pounds on her couch, by the way, again. And I said to her, by the way, after all of this other stuff that had nothing to do with food or weight or my size, I said, by the way, I have gained and lost over 100 pounds multiple times, and I can't believe I have to do it again. I can't believe I have to do it again. And she looked at me and she said, oh, you need OA. And I went, but. And my exact words to her, exact words to her were, I am desperate, so I'll try anything, but I'll tell you right now, I'm going to have a problem with the God thing. And she said to me, okay, well, you know, give it a try, go. And as I said, I was desperate. And I had, you can't tell me I don't know how to lose weight. I've lost over 100 pounds multiple times. Don't tell me that's not my problem. I don't know what my problem is, though. And if I could solve it, I would have. I'll tell you, I'm smart, I'm determined. And you know what? I want to refer to something in the reading that we did this morning on how it works, where it says, if we have what you want and you are willing to go to any lengths to get it. You know what? I've been willing to go to any lengths plenty of times before I came into the room. I went to ridiculous lengths. I'm an addict. I'm an extremist. I don't do anything in small measures. Willing to go to any lengths, yes. The thing I didn't realize was that I needed to be willing to go to any depths. It's not really about what I'm willing to do with like a meal plan or weighing or measuring or how many phone calls a day or what kind of checklist of requirements or questions or whatever. I'll go to lengths. I've gone to, that's not my problem. Going to any depths though that need to be entirely honest, that's a different story. And that's not one that takes force of will. That's one that is exactly the opposite. And it's so hard to be in so much pain and just want to do anything to fix it and be told that I can't. I just can't. I'm powerless. Okay, so I took me about a month after that therapist's declaration to actually get to a meeting. And I went to a meeting that was about a 6-minute drive from my home. This is pre-panny, so we were in person. About a 6-minute drive from my home. And as I said, I had a problem with the God thing, or I thought I was going to have a problem with the God thing. And where this meeting was in a building that was a religion not of the one in which I was brought up. But I will be honest with you, had it been of the religion in which I was brought up, I would have been no more comfortable. Like I had a problem with all of it, mostly because I felt so like alone and disconnected. Anyway, but I walked into the building anyway, and I sat with the discomfort because I was desperate and I was willing to try anything. And the woman up at the front, you know, had a story that really didn't look a lot like mine. She didn't act out in the food in a way that I did. It didn't look like mine, and her upbringing was different than mine, and all of that stuff. And I felt really sad. And I was just devastated at the idea that this was, again, not that, that I, there was nothing I could do, that it was helpless, that I, that it was helpless. And I want to leave the room. I wanted to cry in private. I just wanted to get out of there. And a woman very gently reached down and took my hand. And she said, why don't you take my number and I'll take yours. And I would have cut off my arm to get out of that room, I'll tell you. So I gave her my number and I took hers and I left and I couldn't keep the tears. I was in tears before I got to my car and I drove home and I had what turned out to be my last non-abstinent meal. I didn't know it at the time. And it was just, it was the worst farewell tour ever. It was like what was in the freezer. It was like my kids. And I've gone on some farewell tours. Oh, this is going to be it. I'm going to say goodbye in style. And this was not, because like everything else, I was just exhausted. And I went to sleep crying. And when I woke up the next morning, the thought that came from deep down inside was, that woman was so nice to me last night. And I picked up my phone and I texted her, thank you for being so nice to me last night. No plans to ever come back to the rooms. And she texted words that changed my life, which were, not every meeting is for every person. Try a few others. You might not have heard your story, but you'll hear it out there if you keep coming back. And I went to a different meeting that very night. And it was a 40-minute drive from my house. And there was somebody up front who was telling a story that sounded just like mine. And this time I cried in the room. I didn't wait until I left. And I said, I need help. I need help. That was 5 years. 3 months. And 10 days ago, May 2nd, 2018, my first day in the rooms was May 1st, 2018. And I mention that because May 1st is a holiday called May Day. And a May Day is a cry for help. I am powerless. I have a spiritual malady that manifests itself in a physical allergy and a mental twist. And I am powerless. And I need help.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. 5 minutes, Amy.
Thank you very much. Okay. So we need to ask for help. So I've told you about my adventures before, and I told you about how I got here. Now I want to quote another page from the big book, page 27, from the chapter, There is a Solution. And this is a spiritual program, because I don't have it in me. And for someone who had a problem with the God thing, by the way, spoiler alert, no problem with the God thing. Didn't look like I thought it was gonna, but no problem with it. Okay, page 27. Some, and I'm going to paraphrase just a tiny bit. Some of our addict readers may think they can do without spiritual help. Let us tell you the rest of the conversation our friend had with his doctor. The doctor said, you have the mind of a chronic addict. I have never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang. He said to the doctor, is there no exception? Yes, replied the doctor, there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, addicts have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these people, are suddenly cast to one side and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. Huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes that were once the guiding forces of my life. Like, I need this comfort, or it's different for me, or it's not going to work for me, or I my story, my difference, my all of these ideas, these emotions, these attitudes, these fears, which breed delusions. Once they're planted like that, they can only grow more of the same. More of the same ideas, emotions, and attitudes. And I had not gone to the depths, that deep down inside, that fundamental place where inside every person, adult and child, lies the idea of God. The idea deep down inside, where I had ideas, emotions, and attitudes that were the guiding forces that I planted with fear. And I needed help. And through the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous and through fellowship, it's a three-sided triangle, unity, service, recovery. I work a program. I reach out to other folks and I listen to different ideas. And I give back what has been so graciously given to me. That woman who grabbed my hand saved my life. My therapist who said, oh, you need OA, saved my life. And every single one of you that are here today are saving my life because I cannot do this alone. It says in the first tradition, our common welfare must come first because OA must survive or most of us will surely die. I am most of us. I'm very, very grateful for everyone who has reached out their hand to me. For everyone, excuse me, who has come to me offering help and asking for help and getting me out of myself, because I'll drown in there. One of the things it says when it talks about continuing to take personal inventory, which is to say continuing to go to these depths and looking at them, is that I get to continue to grow. It gets to be a personal journey, and I don't have to do it alone. For someone who had a problem with the God thing, I am very grateful that we are able to choose our own conception of God. Deep down inside, a higher self, a God of your religious upbringing, the idea of magic, divine ideals, whatever does it for you. God, G-O-D, guidance on direction. Whatever gives me that same sense of greater than myself. And I get it in every meeting, in every phone call, and in every frustration, and in every resentment, and in every fear that allows me the opportunity to go to those depths and see what it is I'm really afraid of. And how I don't have, nor do I need me.
That's your time, Amy.
And that's my time. And thank you so much for letting me do a service. I hope I've said something helpful. This is the time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you asked a question last week, please wait until the first three questions have been asked before raising your hand. And if you have a question, please click the raise your hand icon. Melissa, come on in.
Hi, thank you so much, Amy, for your share. That was lovely. Can you tell us what your kind of daily routine looks like to connect with your higher power? Thanks.
Thank you for that question, because that is, it's a spiritual program. So daily connection with higher power. The moment my eyes open, be it with my alarm or without, I acknowledge that I am an addict, a compulsive overeater, and that I need God's help to go through the day. And it is a silent please and thank you that has become automatic as my first thought. And I'm very grateful for that. I do have a morning practice. I read pages 84 to 88 in the big book, and I have a version of it, which I have personalized and continue to do so. So it speaks to me in a language that I understand, using spiritual terms that feel most reverent to me. So I'm reading the big book instructions sort of in my own, through my own words and conception, which helps me connect to it. I have a spiritual space in my home that allows for continuity. And I do, as it says in the big book, people develop a few set prayers, practices, whatever. And I have a few set practices, that I do, some of it with outside tools or literature, but spiritually connected. So that's how I start. And I'll usually do like some journaling and some writing as a part of that. All throughout the day, I try to, when there's things that I need to take inventory on or look at in my nightly review, I'll, you know, take a voice note or jot down a note. So I have it so that at the end of the day, when I have time to sit down and do more of an extended 11-step nightly review. And I have a personalized version of that as well, directly inspired by the questions in the big book, but using language that feels more organic to me. But I am looking at what I planted that day and how it grew, and what I did to be of service. And if there's anything that I want to revisit the next day. And one of the things I love about the 11th step is in the big book, it even though I spoke about it starting in the morning, in the big book, it talks about it starting in the evening, because in between that nightly review and that on awakenings piece is that unconscious contact with God. And to bookend it with a spiritual practice has been very helpful. And then it's just connection with people in program, because I get visits from my higher power through all of you. So I hope that was helpful and answered the question. Thank you, Melissa. Bob, good morning. Come on in.
Good morning. Thank you for your share. It was phenomenal. How important is service to your program?
Well, Bob, you've asked me a question that I love. Service is very important to my program. I think service is important to the program as it's written. And right from the very beginning, I think that wording at the end of the 10th step in the big book, where it says we resolutely turn our thoughts towards someone we can help, what that's really saying, or how that I often hear that, is I resolutely turn my thoughts off of me and what's going on with me and what I'm upset about and what I think I need to do or fix. And service is an antidote to that, to self. So service is very important. I love doing service in a formal manner with service positions where I can show up and contribute to a collective, rotating in and out, taking my turn. I think that's very important. And if you're eligible for that kind of service, I encourage you to do it. And also the service of raising your hand, the service of saying hello to a newcomer in the chat, the service of making a phone call, all of that is my antidote to self. And it is a joy and a privilege, and oftentimes the relief that I don't get from turning inward when that's all I'm looking for. I hope that was helpful. Vincent, good morning. Come on in.
Amy, thank you so much for your share. It's absolutely wonderful. I wanted to ask you about something you mentioned. You talked about vital spiritual experiences. Can you talk about that? How was or were your experience or experiences, and how did that affect your program?
Thank you for that question. That is another favorite thing, because I came in with a problem with the God thing and full of a lot of stubborn, obstinate ideas. And it says in Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience, that the one principle that is the bar against all information is contempt prior to investigation. And that's what I had, was contempt prior to investigation. Anyway, I came in, I said I need help. I got a sponsor. I didn't have a big book yet. My sponsor sent me a photograph. This is like day 2, day 3 in program. My sponsor sent me a photograph of that morning's For Today, which, if you're new, is a daily reader. It's Overeaters Anonymous literature, and it's beautiful little, just little morning readings, very brief, to sort of can help with meditation. She sent me a photograph of that day's for today. And because I was going to get a gold star in recovery, I wrote it in a notebook, rewrote it. I diagrammed it like an English assignment underline. And I saw words in there like opportunity and time and healing. And I put a capital T on time and a capital O on opportunity and a capital H on healing. And I crossed out the word God and I wrote the force of the universe or the universe or something like that. And I put all that in my head and I went for a walk and I was listening to a song on my headphones. The song is not a duet. The lyrics are not a conversation. And yet I heard in that song, in those lyrics, a conversation between myself and a loving higher power where I was saying, I'm in so much pain and I can't do this. And the loving higher power was like, yeah, I know. And I'm here now. None of this was in the songs. I heard God will get to me however God needs to. And I started to like get all misty and I had this and I would like to say I ran back to my house, but I was over 300 pounds. So I walked as quickly as I could back to my house and I went back to that notebook and I started writing more like, okay, okay. And I went to date the page and it was May 4th. Any other Gen X kids in the room? May the 4th be with you. May the force be with you. And I had just written the force all over that page. And I said, you know what? Okay. I don't know what it looks like. And it's not going to necessarily look what I was had contempt of prior to investigating. And it has blossomed for me, but that's where it started. And now I say the word God with my whole heart. And I believe in magic. And I believe in the highest self and the highest good and the collective. And God shows up in all sorts of different ways in that for me. And I love hearing about other people's ideas of a higher power too. So I encourage everyone to listen to others. And I hope that was helpful. Thank you for the question, Vincent. Cheryl, how are you? Come on in.
Amy, thank you for your awesome lead. You do get a gold star for your graph. Thank you for that and your pictures. I was wondering if you could talk about what are your most challenging character defects? How have you made progress on them? And if there are any specifics to be known about how you made progress on your most challenging character defects? Thank you.
What a fantastic question. Thank you. This is a moving target because more keeps getting revealed. If you'd asked me what I thought my most challenging character defects were when I first came into the room, you get a different answer than you get a year later and a year later and you get today. Because more keeps getting revealed. And I keep realizing that there is more that can be healed. So, you know, I would have started by saying stubbornness, need to be right, self-righteousness. It has been recently, I've done a bit of a deep dive, and that's the beautiful thing about these steps. We get to do it over and over again, continue. There is no maintenance on this program. I don't know what I'm maintaining because I wake up every morning the same untreated addict. So I have recently looked at the emotional sobriety, and that has gotten me up close with a lot of these defecting instincts. Defect, not broken, but defect, like I am running away from my highest good, from God, from love. So how do I do that? How do I defect? I try to control things. I try to fix everything. And, you know, with such good-natured intentions, my love gets hijacked by my fear and it turns into a wrecking ball. And I rush, I'll fix it, I'll fix it, I'll help, I'll do it. And I knock everybody off the cliff with the force of my, I'll do it. Because that is once again my agnosticism around the idea that I get in the way when I try and control, when I try and fix. Fear, self-defeating beliefs, those are things that are coming up as I continue to take these deeper dives and looking at those defecting instincts as beginning with whatever fear that my defects are just trying to protect me from that fear. And in a way, I can thank them for that. And also recognizing that they're not, for all of their good intentions, they're not really good protectors. And that takes surrender and that takes acceptance. I don't need acceptance for the things that I like. I don't need acceptance for the things that are easy. And God does not move me to growth through ease and joy. So I guess I'm going to go back to what I said at the beginning, which is I need to be willing to go to those depths and not try and fix it or avoid it or do service to make up for it or work my program harder to earn the recovery. I can't make it happen. I hope I've answered your question. Thank you. Thank you for it, for the consideration. Denny, good morning. Come on in.
Thank you. This has been amazing, Amy. Oh my God. I'm so grateful. And to everyone here. Wow. You know, I am thinking about selflessness and I don't know how much my question is going to apply to everyone. So forgive me if it's self-centered to ask this. I still haven't been willing to be abstinent. So what I'm about to ask, I am aware that this might just be a mental roadblock so that I don't have to give up my red light food because I still get comfort and pleasure from it. And I'm single and it's my boyfriend and blah, 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 blah. That said, this whole meeting, I keep thinking that my core issues are so much worse than the food, even though it is wrecking my health. And I guess I know there are programs for failing at life, running away from life, sabotaging life. Also, I have been single forever. I just shut down that entire part of my life. And I have meshed with my mom. So, but people in the program about running away from life and under being and under earning told me I have to put the food down first. And my little clever brain keeps saying, how on earth is answering a bunch of questions about what I eat going to deal with the fact that I'm in my 50s? I'm terrified of sustaining myself financially. I keep sabotaging myself as an artist and I'm single and all of these things. And so I know part of my brain's like, that's just an excuse because you don't want to put down your red light food. But I also thought you might have something to say about that, how this program can help with those really deeper issues that are really scaring me. And thank you.
Denny, thank you for sharing that with us today. You're not alone. I've been there. I'm there still some days. There's a lot of fear out there and a lot that I think I could run to for ease and comfort. So let me ask you a question. Is the food, is it ease and comfort or is it just familiar? Are we confusing comfort with familiarity? The devil I know. I know what it's going to feel like to be in the food. I know what that pain is. It's hard. Right. And you know what? Facing all of this stuff, going to any depths, being willing to like put down the food one day at a time and admit that I don't know how to do that and I need help. All of that stuff is hard. But I'll ask you, how hard is what you're doing now? Because it's pretty hard to feel hopeless. And it was pretty hard to cry in dressing rooms. And it was pretty hard to have to like cancel family stuff because I didn't have something to wear or I didn't want to be seen again. So choose, because it's all hard. And if every next step is hard, do we want the next step that leads to maybe some relief? And it, by the way, it says in the big book, in the doctor's opinion, that entire abstinence, that putting down those red light foods, it says the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And that's been my experience, that it is a relief to put it down. It's not a punishment and it's not a prison. It's the devil I know, but it's only going to keep me in hell. You're not alone. You have help one day at a time, one moment at a time. And my experience is that I did have to shut the door on the food before I could even get the noise to go down to look at those other issues. Because the food just kept distracting me while I thought I was getting that comfort. And I encourage you to call me if you want to talk about this more, but I'm seeing with the clock that it's time to pause for the secretary's announcements. Thanks for your question. Thank you, everybody, for your questions and your considerations and for sharing your heart today. Thank you for saving me this morning.